Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Foster Inclusion Podcast, and thank you so much for joining me. In this first episode, I'm going to talk about the dimensions of diversity and reflective leadership. The episode should last just over 10 minutes, and we'll cover why, within a Western organizational context, diversity usually means women, people of color, and members of the LGBTQ+ community, why business leaders need to focus on diversity, and finally, some reflection points. But before we get into it, I'd like you to consider two questions while you're listening. The first question is, what does diversity mean to you? The second, how is diversity currently being represented within your organization? So, what is diversity? Simply put, diversity is the mix of people within your organization. It's the thing that makes an employee unique within your organizational context. For the most part, when we look at leadership in Western companies, one particular social identity group still represents the norm. Levels of education may vary, as may areas of management expertise, but organizational leaders still tend to be able-bodied, male, white, and cisgender. Consequently, the term diversity has come to be synonymous with women, Black, Indigenous, people of color, and historically marginalized groups. It's used to refer to people in the LGBTQ+ community and those who profess a religious faith other than Christianity. It's used to refer to persons with disabilities. Within an organization, diversity also speaks to employees' country of origin, language, which is of particular relevance in a country like Switzerland, mid-career hire versus homegrown hire, age, educational background, functional background, area of expertise, etc. As you can see, there are multiple dimensions of diversity, and the things that make us unique within a given context can fill endless tomes. And of course, we are seldom unique in just one way. Our identities are multidimensional and multifaceted. This multidimensional aspect of identity is particularly interesting to observe when an organization is looking to make a quote-unquote diversity hire. Do you hire a woman? Someone from the LGBTQ+ community? A Black person? Someone with a disability? What about someone who speaks Romansh? Actually, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that properly. That's a national language here in Switzerland, but you get my point. And so what if you find a unicorn of a candidate who fits into all of the above-mentioned identity groups? Jackpot? Sounds absurd, doesn't it? You know, I understand the pushback. I understand when hiring managers say they want to hire the best possible candidate without being limited to one particular type of person. I get it. But it turns out that that type of rebuttal is starting to represent a sort of legacy mindset, a failure to adapt to changing societal and stakeholder requirements. As we saw with digital transformation, companies that failed or were too slow to adapt eventually got disrupted. Your business model could be impacted in the long run if you fail to take diversity seriously. The reality is that demographics are changing. Customer, investor, and other stakeholder expectations are evolving. As a result, you as a business leader must take steps towards cultivating a diverse organization in order to survive. It's important to be very clear about your motivation. Right now, it's trendy to go through one of the many certification processes. You may establish targets like achieving a certain score on an index, having a certain percentage of women on the board, executive committee, and in management positions. You may be labeled a great place to work, LGBTQ+ friendly, and the list goes on. Achieving these targets requires a great deal of administrative work, and while your organization may end up looking diverse on paper, with certifications to boot, Your employees may not necessarily feel that it is indeed a diverse or inclusive place to work. Or your organization may be lopsided in terms of representation and fail to benefit from the uniqueness of talent represented in the labor market. You could also develop a false sense of security and leave yourself open to a risk management gap with respect to social events that could damage your brand reputation. Social media have been very powerful in calling out brands for failing to walk the talk. Ultimately, an external incentive like acquiring a badge or certification is not necessarily a sustainable approach when it comes to developing a diverse and inclusive organization. The momentum dies once you receive that badge, and your brand risks coming across as inauthentic. Strategies of tying your diversity and inclusion initiatives to specific stakeholder requirements can be more meaningful. Whether you're paying close attention to who your current customers are and who your future customers will be, recruiting for clinical trials, or responding to investor requirements, by linking your diversity and inclusion strategy to measurable and material business objectives, you have greater incentive to follow through and maintain the momentum. One example that comes to mind is Genentech from the biotech industry. The company's objective is to develop and market more personalized treatments. However, they've identified that current genetic data does not reflect the diversity of the global population. To move forward, they need candidates for clinical trials. In addition, they recognize the value that diversity and fostering belonging bring to their research and development efforts. At the same time, they're operating in an environment where certain populations hold a strong distrust for the biotech, pharma, and medical industries. This distrust is rooted in historical precedents and reinforced by individual experiences. It's further amplified by a lack of representation within the companies in said industries. Recognizing these challenges, doing the work to understand stakeholder requirements, Genentech launched a large diversity and inclusion initiative that seeks to improve D&I within the organization itself and more broadly in society. Trust and brand loyalty are ongoing issues within many industries, including fast-moving consumer goods, sports, and entertainment. Consumers aren't just looking at your product or service offerings. They're looking to see if your brand, your organization, is committed to similar social values. More and more, commitment is demonstrated through behavioral change and representation as opposed to a public-facing statement or maybe a few brown people on your website. If you're a supplier, you could eventually help to strengthen your business customer's brand by showing greater diversity and inclusion within your organization. Ultimately, a sustainable diversity and inclusion strategy starts with you. And here's where reflective leadership comes in. Many professionals working today have never had to think about diversity and inclusion until recently. They've never really had to consider the role that identity plays within a business context. Being immersed in a homogeneous group setting has more or less been the norm. So questions about diversity are bound to evoke a strong response with legitimate concern about being perceived in a negative light. Diversity is not something you'll be able to hide from indefinitely. You will be confronted either directly or indirectly with organizational issues related to diversity, so it's a good idea to consider what diversity actually means to you and some of the personal or professional challenges you face. I think most of us consider ourselves to be fair and objective. But unfortunately, that's not quite the case. Neuroscientists have uncovered that upon seeing a face, our brains, within fractions of a second, establish a social motivation. So, in other words, we've already established a reason to engage with a person before we're consciously aware of that reason. So if you think you're free from holding prejudice, or if you think you're colorblind, think again. This is where reflective leadership is important. Reflective leadership, free from self-judgment, is the key to allowing us to see the biases we hold. There are simple things we can do to identify and see how our biases show up in the office, when we meet new people, and even socially. Harvard has a tool called Project Implicit that lets you select from a series of implicit association tests to get a sense of your attitudes that you may not be aware of. In everyday life, and hopefully in a post-COVID world when we're free to be out and about, we can try testing our assumptions about people. When we see a person we don't know, take a moment to pay attention to how you believe them to be. What comes to mind, for example, when you see a gentleman middle-aged wearing a suit? What comes to mind when you see a woman pushing a stroller? And then consider how you view yourself in relation to them. This is the tricky part, where it's tough to be honest with ourselves. Do you perceive yourself to be in a position of dominant status vis-a-vis the other person? Do you view the person as a peer? Or maybe you see yourself as being subordinate to them. In a meeting, who gets invited? Who gets talked over? Who gets the last word? And who do people listen to? By observing your behaviors and the behaviors of those around you, you start to get a sense of the implicit social hierarchies that inhibit diversity and inclusion. You also get a sense of your role within those social hierarchies. This is going to sound really cheesy. I'm known for being queen cheese. I think that statement says it all. But as a business leader, in order to drive behavioral change, you ultimately have to be the change you want to see. Well, that's the end of my very first episode, and I would like to thank you again for joining me. If you have any questions or comments, email me at saida@fosterinclusion.com. That's SAIDAH at FOSTERINCLUSION.com. And visit my website at www.fosterinclusion.com. Until next time, bye.